You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
The opening words today are from Albert Schweitzer, who in fact was a Unitarian. He was a member of the Church of the Larger Fellowship. He writes, "I cannot but have reverence for all that is called life. I cannot avoid compassion for everything that is called life. This is the beginning and the foundation of morality." We're meeting on the land of the Kaurna people, and we respect their elders, past and present, and their culture and their traditions. We also meet in the tradition of our Unitarian forebears who have been worshipping in South Australia since 1864. The address today will be on the message behind Samuel Taylor Coleridge's Rime of the Ancient Mariner, the epic poem. The format today will be a little bit different from our normal services in that we are supporting the text with music from a cantata, especially written for the poem by English composer John Francis Barnett. And that was some of the music you just heard. A cantata is a musical composition intending to be sung, a concert version of an opera, if you like, as opposed to a sonata, which is a composition played instrumentally. I'm indebted to Jenny Dyster, who turned up with the cantata score, and also to Margaret, who enthusiastically agreed to bring it to life. The address, which is on the poem by Samuel Taylor Coleridge on the Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Samuel Taylor Coleridge, poet, best known for his fantasy poem Kubla Khan, the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and also for the metaphysical and erotic Christabel, which I remember we learnt or tried to learn in year 12 at school. Coleridge and his great friend William Wordsworth spent a lot of time in walks around the Quantock Hills in North Somerset, discussing the classic poets and composing their own verse. It was on such a ramble that the idea for the Rime of the Ancient Mariner was put forward, and with Margaret's help, I wish to explore that today. The story is very much allegorical, rather like an extended parable. It is of a sailor who voyages far away into the southern hemisphere and out into the strangeness of existence. and finally, after profound and supernatural experiences, returns to Haven a radically changed man. In setting the context, you will appreciate that at the time of the composition of the poem, the 1790s, it was the era of epic exploratory sea voyages, especially into the little-known oceans around Antarctica. Names like James Cook, William Bligh, Le Comte de la Pérouse, D'Entrecasteaux spring to mind. In fact, at the time of the composition, it had been less than 25 years since Cook, in Resolution, had ventured further south than any navigator before him. I'll give a brief quote from Cook's journal. Sunday, January 30th, 1773. A little after 4 a.m., we perceived the clouds to the south to be of an unusual snow-white brightness, which denounced our approach to field ice. The edge of this immense ice field was composed of loose ice so close packed together that nothing could enter it. Back to the Ancient Mariner. During the course of the mariner's voyage, he commits a crime of which he must pay penance, and he finally achieves some redemption in recognizing and appreciating the beauty of his fellow creatures. He returns profoundly altered by his metaphysical experiences and is obliged to tell his story over and over again to anyone who will listen. In the instance described in the poem, this is a hapless passerby who is on his way to attend the wedding of his kinsman. To get into the wedding, but in spite of himself, he is held spellbound by the old man and is constrained to hear his story. The wedding guest sat on a stone, he cannot choose but hear, and thus spake on that ancient man, the bright-eyed mariner. The mariner describes how they sailed south to a region of fog, snow, and ice, shades of James Cook here. The sun came up upon the left, out of the sea came he. And he shone bright, and on the right went down into the sea. Higher and higher every day, till over the mast at noon. And the wedding guest is still agitated. He looks as though the story is going to go on, and he's anxious to join the wedding party. The wedding guest here beat his breast, for he heard the loud bassoon. So the ship crosses the equator, and is driven south to the high latitudes of the southern seas, meeting storms and fog and ice and snow. The ship drove fast, loud roared the blast, and southward aye we fled. And the ship becomes trapped in the ice. The ice was here, the ice was there, the ice was all around. It cracked and growled and roared and howled like noises in a swound. An albatross appears and follows the ship. Eventually, the ice splits, and the ship is able to navigate through with a good south wind. And then, God save the ancient mariner, from the fiends that plague thee thus, why look'st thou so? With my crossbow I shot the albatross. The crew initially censure him for his deed, hanging the albatross around his neck. but they later justify the deed. They all averred that I'd killed the bird that brought the fog and mist, and they thereby become complicit in the crime. The ship sails north to the tropics. The wind subsides, and they are becalmed. Down dropped the breeze, the sails dropped down. 'Twas sad as sad could be, and we did break the silence of the sea. All in a hot and copper sky, the bloody sun at noon, right up above the mast did stand, no bigger than the moon. Day after day, day after day, we stuck, nor breath nor motion, as idle as a painted ship upon a painted ocean. Water, water everywhere, and all the boards did shrink. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. A series of supernatural events follows. A phantom ship approaches, crewed by two spectres, death and life in death, who play dice for the lives of the crew and the mariner. Death wins the crew members, but the mariner is won by life in death. The game is done, I've won, quoth she, and whistles thrice. The ghost ship sails off, and the mariner's companions, one after one, by the star dog moon, too quick for groan or sigh, each turned his face with ghastly pang, and cursed me with his eye. So his companions drop down dead, but he is condemned to live on, cursing in his heart the various sea creatures which surround the ship. Sea, and never a saint took pity on my soul in agony. However, eventually, by the light of the moon, the mariner forms a new view of the creatures which he formerly despised, and he blesses them without consciously doing so. And at that moment, the spell begins to break. The self-same moment I could pray, and from my neck so free, the albatross fell off and sank like lead into the sea. Rain begins to fall, and the mariner is thus able to slake his thirst. A wind springs up. The ship begins to move, but without the wind disturbing the sails. The loud wind never reached the ship, yet now the ship moved on. And the dead crewmen rise up and begin to work the ship. It moves on, not by the efforts of the men, nor the demons of earth or middle air, but by a troop of angelic spirits, sent down by invocation of a guardian saint. The helmsman steered, the ship moved on, yet never a breeze up blew. The mariners all gan work the ropes where they were wont to do. They raised their limbs like lifeless tools. We were a ghastly crew. At this revelation, the wedding guest becomes fearful and rises from his seat. I fear the ancient mariner. Be calm, thou wedding guest. 'Twas not those souls that fled in pain, which to their courses came again, but a troop of spirits blessed. A lonesome spirit from the South Pole carries the ship as far as the line in obedience to the angelic troop. The mariner falls into a trance and hears the voices of two of the polar spirit's fellow demons as they relate to each other of the long and heavy penance which has been invoked on the mariner by the polar spirit. "Is it he?" quoth one. "Is this the man? By him who died on cross, with his cruel blow he laid full low the harmless albatross. The spirit who by himself in the land of mist and snow, he loved the bird that loved the man who shot him with his bow." The other with a softer voice, as soft as honeydew, quoth he, "The man hath penance done, and penance more will do." The ship is driven northward by the spirit faster than human life could endure, and then the supernatural motion is suddenly retarded. The mariner awakes and his penance begins anew. "I woke and we were sailing on as in a gentle weather. 'Twas night, calm night, the moon was high, the dead men stood together. All stood together on the deck for a charnel dungeon fitter. All fixed me with their stony eyes that in the moon did glitter. The pang, the curse with which they died, had never passed away. I could not draw my eyes from theirs, nor turn them up to pray." The breeze drives the ship, and it eventually reaches harbour. Swiftly, swiftly flew the ship, yet she sailed softly too. Sweetly, sweetly blew the breeze, on me alone it blew. O dream of joy, is this indeed the lighthouse top I see? Is this the hill? Is this the kirk? Is this mine own country? The harbour bar was clear as glass, so smoothly was it strewn, and on the bay the moonlit light lay, and the shadow of the moon. So the mariner at last returns to harbour, and is shrived by a holy hermit, who lives in a nearby wood. O shrive me, holy man, the hermit crossed his brow. Say quick, quoth he, I bid thee say, what manner of man art thou? Notwithstanding the mariner's confession, and his absolution by the hermit, he is constrained throughout his life to go from land to land and teach, by his example, love and reverence for God's creatures, our Unitarian seventh principle. Forthwith this frame of mine was wrenched with a woeful agony which forced me to begin my fate, and then it left me free. I pass, like night, from land to land. I have strange power of speech. The moment that his face I see, I know the man that must hear me. To him my tale I teach. The wedding ceremony ends. The guests burst from the door. The mariner takes his farewells. The mariner, whose eye is bright, whose beard with age is hoar, is gone. And now the wedding guest turned from the bridegroom's door. He went like one that had been stunned, and is of sense forlorn. A sadder and a wiser man, he rose the morrow morn. Move to closing words, and they're from the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, the penultimate verses, which I hadn't read, but which pretty well sum up the thrust and the ethos of the poem. Farewell, farewell, but this I tell to thee, thou wedding guest. He prayeth well, who loveth well, both man and bird and beast. He prayeth best who loveth best all things, both great and small. For the dear God who loveth us, he made and loveth all.